from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Over the years, state government has amassed a $30 billion backlog in maintenance needs for our roads and our transit systems. The problems we face are the result of years of disinvestment and years of passing the buck. But this year, Democrats and Republicans came together to say enough is enough.
Rebuild Illinois will help ensure that a pipeline of diverse workers are created so that men and women reflecting our communities of this state are prepared for careers in construction and the building trades. It's important.
The state is at just above junk status in its credit rating. So there are not liabilities that can be adopted by the state that would not drive us into junk status. So that is not something that we can do. But again, we want to help municipalities in every way we can. We're looking at all the opportunities to do that, like improving investment returns.
Obviously, the governor is going to be a partner with us. He's well aware, as we all are, that the city has substantial budget issues and financial issues, particularly around our pensions, and we're going to work together cooperatively to see what we can get done.
Well, that's Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Before that, you also heard from Governor J.B. Pritzker. He and his administration on a bit of a victory tour, traveling to places that stand to benefit from new casinos and infrastructure improvements, following up on the signing of that legislation last week. And also the issue of pensions, public pensions, has come up again, involving both the state and the city of Chicago and many other communities across Illinois. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. In studio with me is Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield and a longtime State House observer. Also at our State House studio is Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House editor. And joining us today, Hannah Meisel, a reporter for the Daily Line. And Hannah, it's good to have you on once again.
Glad to be here.
So, Hannah, I'll start with you. We heard from the Chicago mayor in that clip at the start, and also Governor J.B. Pritzker, both appearing at an event this week. And this came on the heels of some reporting that took place saying that the Chicago pension situation, all the liability for the city of Chicago, that the mayor would like to see the state sort of merge some of that with what the state's responsible for. What is going on there, and where does this stand at this point?
Well, the city of Chicago is facing probably a $1 billion, if not more, $1 billion budget shortfall. And, you know, the mayor's only been in office for 6 weeks, couldn't get much done in the way of Springfield help at the end of session because she had literally been in office for 10, 11 days by the time session adjourned. But, you know, so the mayor is looking at, she says she's looking at all options, but what had happened was she told Crane's Chicago Business that she wanted the state to take on some liability for pension payments. Pretty much immediately, the governor's office said, we don't think so. That is going to be pretty impossible. They met over the weekend on Saturday, didn't get much detail, but then on Monday, they, the governor said flat out, like, we can't do that. That would, taking on even more pension liability would basically tank our credit rating into junk status. And already we sit at just above junk status from two of the three major New York credit ratings agencies. And Fitch has us maybe two notches above. So still not much better. So, you know, that's going to kick off a new series, of talks about pension consolidation, what to do about pensions, which I think is a welcome thing for a lot of Springfield observers who, you know, maybe they're happy about all the things that did get done this session, but still the gorilla in the room, the elephant in the room, excuse me for mixing metaphors, is the pension issue. We've had lots of debates over whether to call it a crisis, whether, the state can even do anything. Of course, we had that landmark Illinois Supreme Court ruling back in 2015 that invalidated the major pension overhaul that would have, cut some benefits. So it's really an intractable problem. Now there is a pension task force that's going to give a report later this summer, I believe in August, about what can be done, but options are limited.
And Brian, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I was just saying, and just to build on what Hannah was saying, the intractable problem, there's two ways to look at this. One is the headline number of, $130 billion that Illinois owes for its pensions. I don't have off the top of my head the number for Chicago, however many billions that the pensions are underfunded in the city of Chicago. But that's sort of the long-term view. Is that a crisis? That was one of the arguments that a number of academics made earlier this year, is that that's not a crisis that we need to address now. That's something that years and years down the road, at some point, the Illinois pensions will presumably begin to have difficulty meeting their obligations and could enter some sort of downward spiral. The thing that people think of as a much bigger problem in the short term is this idea of crowding out, which is increasingly the state, if it follows the ramp put in place, the plan put in place in the 1990s to pay a little bit more into the pension system every year, that money is crowding out spending that could be done on things like education, higher education, secondary education, vocational education. So this idea of crowding out spending that could be done on other core priorities of government for pension payments that should have been made in the past, that is sort of the nearer term concern here. And that is something that, it's a problem for the state, but it's, as Hannah said, it's a really big problem for a lot of municipalities in Illinois, which have been shorting pensions over the years and now don't really have the option to do that. The state is making them come up with the money. And so we've seen layoffs of firefighters and police officers in cities across Illinois, and tough decisions like that are going to continue to have to be made.
And Charlie, if I look at this and I'm a citizen of the state who doesn't follow state government, but somebody tells me, we may have the state of Illinois take over more of these pension liabilities, I'd be thinking maybe that's not the best group of people to be in charge of these problems because they haven't dealt with it well over the many decades that has led to the current situation. But these ideas have come up before in the state of Illinois. They haven't gone anywhere, though.
No, and part of it is, as Brian was saying, it's a question of crowding out. One of the reasons we're where we are is that over the years, the competition for dollars for things like education, human services, public safety, in a sense, crowded out what the state should have been putting in year after year to cover the cost of the benefits being earned by public workers in that particular year. And we haven't done that probably for 100 years or more. And so suddenly we're at a point where now we have to catch up on what we didn't do in the past. And in the past, legislators and governors, rather than put money away for 20, 30, 40 years in the future, they felt it more appropriate or more politically convenient to spend that money on services now and worry about the future later on, rather than, in a sense, be honest with taxpayers and say, look, we have to make some tough decisions, and it's better for us in the long run not to kick the can down the road and wind up paying humongous interest costs, but rather maybe either raise revenues to cover what we want to spend plus what we owe the pensions, or just cut back on what we want to spend so that we can responsibly fund the pensions over the years. And it happened at city levels too. Now, the pension problems we're talking about for municipalities basically are for police and firefighters. Interestingly enough, there's a fund that consolidates the pensions for everybody else, most everybody else who works for cities and counties. It's called the Municipal Retirement Fund. And because over the years, regularly, that fund has been sustained by the proper amount of contributions from all the member communities, it's pretty well funded. There's no emergency with the IMRF. It's in great shape. But it was because over the years, it's been properly funded year after year after year, whereas the police and fire have kind of gone by the wayside. And now, as Brian said, there's now a state law that says, municipality, you have to put in this amount of money. They have no choice about it. And that's where Chicago is. That's why Rahm Emanuel had to raise property taxes to make some of those payments, and I guess Mayor Lightfoot is facing the same dilemma.
Can I, and I would just like to draw a line from what Charlie was saying about years ago, these decisions to, I guess you could say, artificially keep taxes lower than what the state needed to be spending, both on current operations for, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and future pension payments. So people back then got a pretty good deal on taxes. Well, you draw that now to the future, and people who were getting a good deal on taxes back then are now often retired, collecting retirement income. And one of Mayor Lightfoot's proposals is to offset the cost if the state were to assume some of these pension burdens of municipalities, would be to start taxing retirement income. Now, Governor Pritzker campaigned against this idea, but there is a way to look at it. Okay, the people who are now collecting retirement income and not paying state taxes on that money, they are paying federal taxes, but not paying state taxes on those pensions, got a sweet deal decades ago, and now they're still getting a sweet deal in retirement. And as I've often pointed out on this program, that doesn't apply to old people who aren't fortunate enough to have been able to save for retirement. If you have to work until you're 80s, you know, the proverbial Walmart greeter, although Walmart is scaling back on those positions. But I had an aunt who was working in banquet facilities well into her 80s as a server. You know, this... Those people are paying income tax on their income. So it is a potential source of revenue, but given the strength of AARP and the relatively high proportion at which people who are at retirement age tend to vote as compared to other demographics, politicians have been very reluctant to broach that subject.
Hannah, what about the idea of reamortizing the debt in the pension debt in the state of Illinois? That has come up before. I even think that was part of one of the groups that was working with the governor, you know, after his election, looked at that idea, and some people thought that had some merit as well.
Right. So, I mean, this idea of reamortizing what's called the 1994 pension ramp, which was implemented under former Governor Jim Edgar. So that gave us, what was it, 45 or 50 years to, I believe it was 50, to, you know, get to something like 90% funding of all of state pension funds. In his budget address, Governor Pritzker floated the idea of, you know, skipping out on $800 million, although some analysts said, you know, really it'd be close to $1 billion worth of pension payments this year, and then for the next 7 years, kind of smoothing out that curve. But the problem with that is that, you know, basically every dollar that you don't pay now, you're going to end up paying later, you know, probably with interest. So it'll save you in the short term, sure, you know, from crowding out those state services that also, you know, need money, and it's all competing dollars because it's all from the same general revenue fund. But, you know, you're going to end up paying later. And so that, I think, gives more. And also, he was roundly criticized in the press from, you know, all kinds of groups. Even Democrats were like, I don't know about this. That's going to be a really, really difficult sell. And so after in April, we got this quote unquote April surprise of $1.5 billion unexpectedly into state coffers from, you know, income taxes. The governor canceled that, and, you know, people breathed easy. And honestly, I think that was probably the linchpin of how everything worked out this session, because there wasn't that pressure, you know, that monster kind of breathing down everyone's neck. But the governor still hasn't really said for sure whether he's let go of the idea of reamortization.
Charlie, is that a bad idea in your mind? I mean, we talked about this when it was first floated by the governor, but is that a bad idea to come up, you know, we've to revisit the pension ramp, I guess you could say, 20 or so years later?
Yeah, I don't know that's necessarily a bad idea, but it's one that I think we should examine with great caution. Part of the, what would you say, the obvious answer to all this is that times change. If you go back to 1995, when the ramp was put in place with the idea of gradually reaching 90% of what was required to fund these systems by 2045, 50 years later, we were looking at a period when the inflation rate was very high. We were looking at a period where year after year, the state always brought in more money than it had the year before into its general funds. And so the expectation was that this can be resolved without too much heartache or headache. And also the state workforce was much larger than it is now. I don't know the exact numbers, but the headcount of state employees is down like 20,000. Those people who are not hired aren't paying into the retirement system, obviously. So that share of the money is not coming in. The return on investments, back when there was double-digit inflation, some of the pension funds were earning double-digit returns. That's no longer true. So some of the circumstances that existed when we adopted this ramp now are no longer working. And so we have to readjust our thinking. If there were some guarantee that there would be some way to set aside a pot of money that would not be touched, and we could refinance the pension debt the way someone might refinance their mortgage, that might make sense. We'd pay more in the long run, but it would ease the pressure in the, what Governor Quinn referred to as squeezy the python, crowding out all the other services that people want. But in a way, we're going to have to make up for, if you will, the financial sins of the past or the omissions of the past.
Well, it's probably not the last time we'll hear about pensions, certainly. And again, as Hannah mentioned, we have possibly some recommendations coming later this summer from that panel, so we'll continue to follow that. I want to move on.
Something historical note. For me, it's kind of ironic because the municipal funds that are under fire or facing this pressure are for police and firefighters. Now, one of the reasons that the effort to cut pension benefits that Hannah referred to earlier, that the Supreme Court tossed based on the constitutional language that says membership in a public retirement system is a contractual relationship, the benefits of which shall not be diminished or impaired, that language was added to the Constitution at the time of the Constitutional Convention back in 1970, and major proponents included police and fire unions who were concerned that if local governments got home rule, the first thing that would happen when mayors and city councils and aldermen were facing fiscal problems was that they would just cut benefits to their first responders.
And Hannah, we'll give you the last word on the pension issue today.
Well, so, you know, like I said, later this summer, we will have suggestions made in a report by this task force. And, you know, one of the major things, like I said earlier, that's getting floated is pension consolidation. However, the last time that this was seriously studied as an edict from the changes in 2011 when we got a tier two pension system, consolidating pensions, you know, getting an IMRF-like thing, that sounds so appealing, right? But according to this study by, you know, an outside group, it's not that simple because we have 638 or so pension, you know, individual police and fire pension funds for downstate, and they're all at varying levels of health and fundedness and, you know, also a number of assets. And so they said, really, maybe the best thing to do would be a partial consolidation, getting all the ones that are have assets under $10 million together, you know, and then that would save probably only like $210 million. Now, of course, that was 2012 money, but things haven't really changed. In fact, you know, in some cases gotten worse, in some cases gotten better because of that pension law on, you know, you have to actually start funding these things. But, you know, it's just not as simple as it seems.
Brian, let me move on to the governor this week, Juliana Stratton, lieutenant governor, also going with him around the state, sort of a victory lap, I guess you could say, after signing both an infrastructure program and also gambling legislation. He was appearing at places that are getting some new casinos, also going around touting some of the projects that are included in this capital program, as we call it. And at the same time, the gas tax went up this week. So he was sort of out there, it seemed to me, to try to walk a bit of a line and try to say, hey, you're going to be paying a little bit more, but here's what it's going for.
Yeah, that's right. A victory lap is a pretty good way to describe it. And he's been in all parts of the state. He started out in northern Illinois, Chicago, Rockford, Waukegan. He was in southern Illinois this week. He was also in Champaign-Urbana area as well, as we're taping this. So this is, like you said, there's the gas tax went up. First thing Monday morning, I was filling my tank. I did not smartly try and do it the night before to save a few cents. And the clerk was even sort of half jokingly taunting, saying, "How do you like your new gas tax here?" Although I think the station had not yet charged me for it yet. So anyway, I hope the State Department of Revenue doesn't come after me. Long story short, this is something where the governor is trying to soften the blow of this tax increase, as he wants voters to continue to support higher taxes in Illinois through a graduated income tax, which is going to be on the ballot next year. And so, as you said, the way he's doing this is pointing out all the billions of dollars that are going to be spent on schools, universities, roads, bridges. Mass transit is something that's getting more than $4.5 billion through this capital plan over the coming years. So this is something that he can point to as a something that was truly bipartisan in Springfield, for better or worse. And he is going to try and get as many ribbon cuttings and positive stories in local press as he possibly can.
I'm glad you mentioned bipartisan, Brian. And Hannah, you were at least one of these events, I believe, and the one in Rockford. And we're seeing Republicans, along with the governor, up there, taking some credit as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so this is something. Casino expansion, Rockford is a perfect example. It's wanted a casino basically since the first ones were legalized in the early 90s, so for the last 30 years. Longtime state Republican Senator Dave Severson, he was there, and he just heaped the praise on J.B. Pritzker. And he said, you know, it's been very rare to have a governor who listens. Of course, you know, Republicans had a really, really tough time under Bruce Rauner because they didn't feel free to, you know, speak their minds on things with the governor lording, his major wealth over them and actively saying in the press that, you know, if you do what I want, then you will get rewarded. And if you don't, well, then expect a challenge. And we saw that, locally with the primary race against Sam McCann in 2016, in that. Then, of course, Sam McCann turned around and launched a third-party campaign for governor last year, which might have hurt Rauner. Of course, it turned out that Pritzker's margin of victory was so large that it didn't really matter. But, these kinds of things, even though down the line in the next 3 years of the governor's term, it's going to be a lot harder. I mean, we just spent most of the program talking about pensions. That's going to be really hard. There's going to be really hard other decisions that have to be made. And so I think the glow from this first session will last the governor for a while. And I think that's probably the best thing that he could have done for himself, especially heading into this 2020 campaign cycle.
And Charlie, before we got about a minute or so before we need to move on, but get your take on that as well.
Well, for me, it was, you know, to quote Yogi Berra, it was deja vu all over again, because that's what governors have done historically. They've gone out whenever there's, particularly when there's ever a public works improvement program, they've gone to different areas and they've said, here's what we're going to build in your area because your lawmakers voted to increase your taxes. For example, Pritzker was down in southern Illinois, and he talked about the new casino that's going to open up in the Carterville area, affiliated with a local winery down there. And the Republican lawmakers representing the area were there with him. And so it's an opportunity to show folks what they're actually going to get for the money that's being spent. There will be tangible, physical evidence that this money is being used wisely. And in southern Illinois, his press office, the governor's press office, put out a couple of news releases, and they were listing the projects, several dozen projects in the Carbondale area. And they had another one for other parts of Southern Illinois. And so they're really touting it, and I think with some justification. These are things that have been waiting for years to be addressed, and the history has been we do this like every 10 years. Pat Quinn went around 10 years ago and cut ribbons. George Ryan did it 10 years before that. Thompson and Edgar did it when they had building programs. So it's a way to show the citizenry, here's what you're getting for your investment.
Okay, let's move on down to our notes from the field. Hannah, we'll start with you.
Sure. Like I said, I was in Rockford on Monday where the governor was on that leg of the statewide capital bill and casino tour, basically. And Rockford had put in a lot of resources for lobbying for a casino here. And at the event, they showed their gratefulness. I should say the Tourism Bureau, not tax dollars. But they had these signs with the governor's faces and the three local lawmakers. I should also note the Republicans who voted no on the casino bill were completely left out and not even mentioned, the local ones. But they had signs that said, like, JB Delta Sin and Maurice West bet on us, or the opposite. And they also, I didn't see it in person, but I read about it later, they had poker chips with the same, which I thought was fun.
Collector's items, I guess. Charlie?
Commemorative, yeah.
Well, the State Office of Tourism announced the results of tourism to Illinois last year. And what the Office of Tourism reported was that for the eighth year in a row, Illinois set a new tourism record. We had more than 117 million visitors, which was roughly 3 million more than the year before. And they spent roughly $42 billion, which supported, according to the Office of Tourism, more than 340,000 jobs. So whatever else may be happening that's not good in Illinois, at least our attraction for tourists is continuing to hold. Now, I would add that last year was our bicentennial year, and I assume some of the uptick in tourism would be people coming for the bicentennial events.
Okay, and Brian?
Every year, one of the biggest events on the Illinois political calendar are the party days, political party days at the Illinois State Fair, the Governor's Day, and then whatever party is out of power. Last year, that was Democrats' Day, and Governor Rauner's last year in office. They got a pretty big name for their big county chair's breakfast. Joe Biden was supposed to be here, but he was ill, called in at the last minute. Instead, they got some guy who is like a mayor in Indiana. Nobody really heard of him. Pete Buttigieg. Yeah, obviously he's gone on to bigger things as one of the presidential candidates now. Well, this year they got another big name to speak at what is now Governor's Day at the Illinois State Fair. House Speaker, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is going to be coming to Springfield to address the Democratic County Chair's breakfast.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and our guest Hannah Meisel. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.